Welcome to Albion Narrations. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Today's narration will be Civilization in Britain, 2000 BC, by T.F.G. Dexter. Part 1. Along the Malabar coast in southern India are to be found fairly large communities of native Christians who do not owe their Christianity to any comparatively recent attempts to convert India. These native Christians maintain that their ancestors were first converted by St. Thomas the Apostle in the first century. That may or may not be, but one thing is fairly certain. They have been Christians from a very early date, perhaps as early as the 6th century. A fussy wife of a newly appointed Anglo-Indian official went into one of the schools of these native Christians and, going up to the master, asked in a rather supercilious way, "My dear man, when were you converted to Christianity?" "Madam," he answered, "my ancestors were Christians when yours were heathen savages who went about half-naked, painted in woad." "Savages? Half-naked? Painted in woad?" This Hindu was repeating only what the English had taught him, for this idea is a current one among us today. Number 2. A few years ago, so-called comic artists were fond of depicting half-clad ancient Britons with negroid features fleeing in terror from gigantic crocodiles and other awesome beasts. Most of us are old enough to recollect these pictures, which, fortunately for the truth, seem to be now out of fashion. These drawings had many anachronisms, but two only need be mentioned. The fearsome reptiles depicted were extinct long before man appeared on the earth, and the ancient Britons, and by ancient Britons we mean those people who so valiantly opposed the Romans, were, as we shall see, civilized. And here it may be well to make a digression and endeavour to explain what is meant by civilization. 3. It is fairly easy to say that such and such a tribe or people is savage, semi-civilized, or civilized, but it is not easy to define the term civilization itself. The word civil in civilization is connected with the Latin word civis, citizen, and with our English word civility, which nowadays means politeness, but which once upon a time signified the state or condition of being a citizen. So there would seem to be some connection between civilization and being a citizen, and in support of the idea, we may mention that the word politeness, generally considered to be from politus or polished, may ultimately be connected with a Greek word polis, meaning city. Philology apparently indicates that men became civilized when they commenced to live in cities, and when they learned to be civil or polite to one another. 4. As long as men lived in families and considered only members of their own family, there was really no civilization. But when many families commenced to live together in communities, villages, towns, cities, and when men began to learn to be civil or polite to people outside their own families, then civilization began. Now, some men are nature's gentlemen. They are naturally considerate of others. But unfortunately, there are some who are bullies. Others grasping and greedy, and yet others rascals in one way or another. So rules or laws gradually arose, telling these bullies and rascals how they were to behave, and punishing them if they behaved badly. And thus we find the presence of rules or laws to be another sign of civilization. 5. When men began to live together in communities, it was soon found that some could do certain things much better than others. Accordingly, the men clever in making things out of wood became the carpenters, those expert in working iron, the blacksmiths, and so on. Again, some men showed themselves adepts in buying and selling goods, and in speaking the languages of other peoples, and thus arose the merchant class. This process is sometimes described as a differentiation of function. 6. But in a really stable state, these classes must not be totally segregated from one another. They must retain the capacity of combination for the common good and the common safety. 7. So we may now enumerate a few of the chief signs of civilization. A. Living together in large communities, villages, towns, or cities as citizens. B. Among these citizens, the reign of law protecting the weak against the strong. C. The classification of these citizens according to the work they could do best, that is, differentiation of function. And lastly, D. A capacity of combination among the various classes of citizens. 8. We are too apt to think that civilization means printing, elaborate machinery, science, etc. But some of these things sometimes tend rather to destroy than to promote real civilization. Thus, printing brings with it snippet literature, which discourages prolonged continuity of thought. Machinery is apt to make the man who tends it into a machine. The blessings of science bring with them poison gas and the zeppelin. 9. The opinion of a few scientists notwithstanding, there would really seem to be a rough and ready correspondence between the size of the head and mental capacity. Leaving aside abnormal cases, such as water on the brain, we find that generally speaking, the larger the head, the greater the intelligence. Anthropologists are often puzzled because the cranial capacity of ancient man is sometimes greater than that of some of the inhabitants of our crowded cities today. The reason is not far to seek. Man of old had to think how to provide for his wife, his children, and himself with food, shelter, and clothing. He had to think, or perish. Many modern men do not have to think. The state does all the thinking for them. The man who 3,000 years ago shot birds with bow and arrow for food may have been more intelligent and quite as civilized as the modern man who shoots them with a gun for sport. 10. But before we can proceed far with our investigations, there are other terms which require elucidation, and among them, history and archaeology. By history is generally understood a knowledge of past events gleaned from written records, and written records regarding Britain are very few previous to Julius Caesar's invasions in the middle of the 1st century before Christ. If we wish to learn much before that time, we have to study what are sometimes called prehistoric monuments, such as Stonehenge, and the cromlechs, barrows, and hill camps which dot our landscapes. Also the artifacts, or works of men, which the spade from time to time reveals to us. This study is known as archaeology, a word meaning a knowledge of ancient things. The archaeologist divides the ancient history of man into three great stages. Number one, the Stone Age, from the earliest times to about 1800 BC, when man used knives, weapons, and other implements made of stone. The Neolithic or New Stone Age is the later and the more important period of this era. Number two, the Bronze Age, from about 1800 BC to 450 or 300 BC, when he used implements made of bronze, an alloy or mixture of copper and tin, in the proportions of about 9 parts of copper to 1 of tin. 3. The Iron Age, from about 450 or 300 BC, when he became acquainted with the use of iron, and developed its use to the present day, which may be described as the Age of Machinery. This tripartite division was first formulated by Sir John Lubbock, afterwards Lord Avebury, and at the time the division seemed a good one. but a fuller knowledge has shown it to be not entirely satisfactory. Still, this division has to stand because we cannot as yet find anything better. 11. An endeavour will now be made. 1. To prove that some, at any rate, of the ancient Britons at the time of the Roman invasions were civilised, and 2. To establish a strong presumption that there was a civilization in parts of these islands as early as the beginning of the Bronze Age, circa 1800 BC, or even earlier towards the end of the Stone Age, circa 2000 BC. 12. First, to prove that the ancient Britons were civilized at the time of the Roman invasions. Many ancient British coins, mainly gold, have been found in central and southern England, and on them are engraved heads of remarkable artistic merit. As we know, the human face is a particularly difficult thing to draw, and the men who drew these heads were far removed from savages. Moreover, some counterfeit coins have been found, undoubted proofs of an advanced stage of civilization. Competent authorities date these coins, real and counterfeit, at about 100 BC. The queer-looking horses on the reverse are not barbaric, as is commonly supposed, but additional proofs of the civilization of the Britons. This, however, is a long story which must be deferred to in a subsequent booklet. 13. Much evidence regarding the high culture of the ancient Britons is furnished by the enamels found from time to time in Britain. Antiquaries are generally agreed that these enamels are of British manufacture and they date them between 200 BC and 200 AD. Among them, we may instance that chef d'oeuvre of prehistoric Celtic art, the enamelled bronze shield found in the Thames at Battersea. Enamelling was unknown to the Romans until they learned it from the Celts. Philostratus, writing in the 3rd century of our era, speaks of the Britons and their art of enamelling. They say that the barbarians who live in the ocean pour these colours upon heated brass that they adhere, become hard as stone, and preserve the designs that are made upon them. The Britons were past masters in the art of enamelling, and speaking of some enamels found in Gaul, Dr. Anderson says that these are the work of mere dabblers in the art compared with the British examples, that the home of the art was Britain, and that it had reached its highest stage of indigenous development before it came into contact with Roman culture. The process of producing these enamels required great technical skill, which meant long and laborious training on the part of the artisans who could not have manufactured them without furnaces capable of generating a high temperature. The existence of these art treasures implies the existence of a skilled artisan class who had spent years at their craft, the knowledge of which they inherited from artisans before them. It also implies a class rich enough to buy the enamels when they were made. Such artifacts betoken settled government, good laws, peace over long periods, and prosperity. In short, a civilization of no mean order. 14. Professor Haverfield is of opinion that some of the Britons knew Latin before the Christian era, and in a paper contributed to the Cambridge Antiquarian Society on the Arantine Bowl found at Foxton, Cambridgeshire, he observes that there was, before the Claudian conquest, a Celtic population prosperous enough to import and educated enough to use some of the finest products of the continental civilization. 15. Scattered up and down classical literature, we find admissions as to the civilization of the Britons. Posidonius, who travelled in Britain around 90 BC, says that the inhabitants of Belerion, which is probably Land's End, were very fond of strangers and civilized in consequence. A remark to which we shall refer again later on. Caesar says that Britain was well peopled, full of houses, and that the Britons themselves possessed cattle in abundance. Undoubted signs of civilization. He also tells us that the Druids used Gerecian letters, an indication that some British culture was of a foreign origin. More proofs of the civilization of some of the Britons at the time of the Roman invasions could be given. But at the risk of wearying the listener, who will, it is hoped, agree that the question needs no further demonstration. But whence arose the idea that the Britons at the era just mentioned were savages? First, from the fact that most of the inhabitants of northern Britain were at that time in a more or less savage state, only those in central and southern Britain being civilised. Secondly, from the fact that the Romans looked with contempt upon any civilization different from their own, and it is mainly to the Romans that we are indebted for our accounts of early Britain. We made exactly the same mistake when we first came into contact with the Hindus and with the Chinese. We thought them barbarians, whereas we now know that they have a civilization at least as old as our own, and perchance, in a few respects, superior. 17. Our next task is to establish a strong presumption, which it is admitted hardly yet amounts to proof, that there was a civilization, or perhaps several civilizations, in these islands as early as the beginning of the Bronze Age, circa 1800 BC or even earlier. A gold cup found in a round barrow near the Cheese Ring in southeast Cornwall in 1837 was at the time pronounced by competent authorities to be of the Bronze Age. Unfortunately, this wondrous relic has mysteriously disappeared, but fortunately, pictures of it are still in existence. A cup very like the Cheese Ring gold cup in size, but beautifully carved out of a block of amber, has been found near Brighton, and is pronounced by competent authorities to be of the Bronze Age. The cup found at Denzell Morgan in Pedar, Cornwall, seems to be modelled on the same plan as the one just mentioned, but it is made of clay and not amber. The gold petrel discovered in a barrow in Flintshire, and the ornament, probably of a sacred horse, is also of the Bronze Age. The gold lunettes or uniluli found in Ireland, Cornwall, Wales and southern Scotland are believed to be moon symbols. They have well-defined and artistic ornament and are supposed to date from quite early in the Bronze Age. And the gold torques, or torques so common in Ireland, are perhaps older still. 18. Stonehenge may be adduced as another indication of an early civilization in Britain. Stonehenge was considered by Professor W. Gowland to be of rather late Neolithic age, but Lord Avebury thought it belonged to the Bronze period. Sir Norman Lockyer, working on astronomical data, arrived at a date of 1680 BC, with a possible error in either direction of 200 years. The battle of the date of Stonehenge is perhaps not yet over. It is probable that, like our cathedrals and abbeys, different parts were erected at different times. But with this reservation, there would now seem a fair consensus of opinion among archaeologists that Stonehenge was erected at the beginning of the Bronze Age, perhaps circa 1800 BC. 19. Commenting on the fact that some of the stones of Stonehenge came from Pembrokeshire, Dr. R. E. M. Wheeler says, "There is no more striking fact in the whole of British prehistory than the proved transportation of the famous blue stones of Stonehenge from the mountains of Pembrokeshire to the shores of Wiltshire." The religious and political centralisation implied by this mysterious act in an era of forest and fen unmapped and often untraced can scarcely have been surpassed in any later prehistoric age. Dr. Rendell Harris thinks the stones were waterborne, first via the Bristol Channel, and afterwards along the Avon, a far more likely hypothesis. Whichever is correct, the transport of these rock masses over such a great distance implies an intelligent direction, perhaps of slave, perchance of free, labour. In any case, the feat indicates the presence of a civilization at least as early as 1800 BC. 20. Avebury. Perhaps originally the largest circular megalithic structure in the world, covers an area of 28.5 acres and is now difficult to trace, for the village of Avebury has been built within it, largely from the stones of the circle itself. John Aubrey, 1626 to 1697, our first real antiquary and folklorist, says that Avebury doth as much exceed in greatness the so renowned Stonehenge as a cathedral doth a parish church. While Leslie Forbes observes that Avebury is, beyond comparison, the greatest in point of extent, in the amount of labour expended, and in the size of the monoliths of which it was constructed, of any circular primitive temple as yet noticed in Asia, Africa, or Europe. Lord Avebury, who took his title from this erst-time mighty megalith, assigned it to the end of the Stone or the beginning of the Bronze Age, probably about 2000 BC. Silbury Hill, the largest artificial hill in Europe, is not far away. It covers 5.5 acres and rises to a height of 125 feet. Nor must we omit to mention the recently discovered Woodhenge, probably older than Stonehenge or even than Avebury itself. 21. There is yet one more indication of civilization in the Stone Age. Trepanning, that is, the making of an opening in the skull for relieving the brain from compression or irritation, is a surgical operation demanding no mean skill. Yet in Britain, skulls undoubtedly of Neolithic or late Stone Age have been found which show that this operation had been performed during life with complete success. The primitive Neolithic surgeon must have used a sharp flint, to us a clumsy instrument, but flint is less likely to carry germs than steel, a point in which the Neolithic surgeon had an advantage over his modern representative. Yet one cannot help marvelling that such an operation should have been possible at such an early period. The man who performed it was no savage, and we have in these trepanned skulls indications of culture in Britain in the Neolithic Age, probably 2,000 years before the Christian era. 22. To sum up, there are strong indications, which amount nearly if not quite to proof, of a civilization in Britain as early as 2000 or 1800 BC. These indications become more and more certain as we descend the ages, and around about the time of Julius Caesar and the birth of Christ, we may consider it proved that Britain had a civilization of no mean order. There is little or no doubt that parts of Britain once possessed an archaic civilization. Most of us have hitherto regarded Rome as a great civiliser, and it comes as somewhat of a shock to learn that some competent authorities think that Rome was largely instrumental in destroying the archaic civilization of Britain. But this is a long tale, too long for recital here. Suffice it to say that the barbarous Saxon completely effaced the little British civilization that the Romans left. 24. An insistent question now arises. Whence did Britain derive this ancient civilization? It is at first sight easy to surmise that it was derived from Greece and Rome. But Greece did not come into notice much before 1200 BC, and the traditional date for the founding of Rome is 753 BC. Stonehenge, built around 1800 BC, is thus more ancient than Greece and Rome, while Avebury, erected around 2000 BC, is older still. This ancient civilization is older than the Celt in Britain. Avebury and Stonehenge were of hoary antiquity when the first Celt landed here around 1200 BC. To find the sources of our most ancient civilization, we must look for something older than Greece and Rome, something older than the earliest of the Celts, and we are driven to look to the East, the source of most culture, sacred or profane. Archaeologists are of opinion that there was a civilization in Egypt as early as 3500 or 4000 BC, perhaps even as far back as 5000 BC. The civilization of the Babylonian area is thought by some to be older still. There was yet another primitive civilization on the banks of the Indus. Yet another civilization midway in time between the Egyptian and the Grecian is that of Crete and the Eastern Mediterranean, circa 3000 BC. 25. A thought. Is the source of our most ancient civilization to be sought in Crete and the Eastern Mediterranean, or in Egypt, or in Babylonia, or are its sources to be found in all three? And we'll leave that there for now. Thank you very much for listening, and watch out for part two of Civilization in Britain 2000 BC.